What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Knowing is Knowing. I'm your host, Rashad Young, and as always, I appreciate you guys tuning in to another episode. I'm super, super grateful to continue the series of great conversations, especially during Mental Health Month. Today, I have a special guest. His name is Brandon, also known as I Am a Creator Being. This conversation was so dope, so phenomenal. We talk about a lot of things I really think is important. More importantly, his story, who he is, his battle with things, mental health, spirituality, growth, mindfulness, like truly, truly in-depth conversation. So if you are a mindfulness freak or a self-development junkie, this will be the episode for you. His information will be in the episode description, so make sure to check it out. Check out his stuff, man. Brandon, thank you, brother, so much for being a part of the episode. I'm super excited to stay connected with you, man. I feel like I've made a lifelong friend after this conversation. So enjoy the conversation, guys. Enjoy the episode. I appreciate you guys. Until next time, peace.
Super excited for you joining. As all you guys have been utilizing the threads offer, I always find it funny when people are surprised that I was serious about getting people to join. You know, I know people do different things for engagement and stuff like that, but I really do find a lot of joy in connecting with people, man. I've been doing this for a couple of years, and I think we all have different stories in the world that's really important. And I just like to find ways to bridge the gap, to get people to kind of share their stories about things that maybe we don't know about you, and also just common, I think, conversations that people should have, man. So for those who don't know who you are, and who are you to the world?
Wow, great question. Who am I to the world? I am a writer. I am a teacher. I suppose I could also say I'm an artist. I create different kinds of art, mostly written form, all centered around conscious evolution or spirituality. And I share what I'm learning. I don't pretend that I'm some, you know, perfect enlightened master, you know.
Yeah. No, that's beautiful. So where does your story originate from? Like, where are you from? How do we get to this place of enlightenment, educating others, writing, and all that good stuff?
Right. So I never expected to be writing or teaching about spirituality and mental wellness. I kind of just found myself dealing with those things personally and learning a lot as I was, you know, growing through it and healing through all sorts of things, depression and addiction and being suicidal for quite some time, and also healing from a life debilitating autoimmune condition. So to get to where I am today, it wasn't something I ever really had in mind when I was younger. I always wanted to work with computers, you know, and I was a software engineer for some time until my health became severe. I was severely ill. I was losing sleep because of excruciating pain in my chest. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't move a single inch of my body without severe pain. So I had to quit work indefinitely. And I went to the emergency room. And when I was there, doctors, they noted that I tested positive for autoimmunity, and they said that there's nothing they could do about the condition I was in because it was just inflamed tissue. And they actually concluded by asking me if I had a written will. And I was only 24 years old at the time.
Oh, wow.
So it was, I wasn't expecting that. And then they kind of just like awkwardly left the room. And I sincerely thought I was going to die at the time. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't eating. I lost a lot of weight. My hair was falling out. I was in really bad shape. And that was the first time in my life where I made a serious commitment to anything. And I committed myself to, I wanted to know if there really is a creator of the universe. And I devoted myself entirely to knowing the truth. I just wanted to know the truth. And I figured I was going to die anyway. So if I'm wrong, it doesn't really matter, you know? So yeah. I just wanted to go for it. I wasn't working at the time because I was in so much pain. And after making this commitment, I started attracting all sorts of teachings and books and people pointing me toward spirituality, non-duality specifically, and healing from PTSD, which I didn't even know I had at the time, CPTSD to be specific. And that's really when my healing journey began consciously. It first began spontaneously when I was 19 years old. I was a sophomore at university, severely depressed, failing my classes, struggling with addiction, and I was planning on ending my life. And I had a plan set for the first week before my sophomore year began. So during the summer, I was blowing through all my savings, just burning all the cash I had on whatever pleasure, mostly junk food at the time. And that was my third plan. So I kept rehearsing it because the previous two plans I backed out of at the last second. I was, first one was I was standing at the roof of a building. And the second one I had, well, it doesn't really matter. Anyway, the day of my plan, my older sister texted me. She lived on the other side of the country. We didn't really have a close relationship. She had no idea what was going on in my life. And she texted me, "You're scaring me, Brandon. Is everything all right?" I stopped dead in my tracks. I'm like, "What the hell is she talking about?" And I scrolled up on the chat, and immediately I saw this novel length rant about life. It was the most apathetic thing. I was just complaining and saying how I basically gave up on life. Everything sucks. I'm like, I don't even remember writing that. That's crazy.
Wow.
And her sending me that message, I'm like, wow, this is really, it got way out of my control. And she kind of like shone a light in my face, and it helped me to see I really need to do something about this now. So at the time, up until then, I had already spoken to numerous therapists, psychiatrists, medication didn't work. So the first thing that came to mind was to admit myself to the neuropsychiatric hospital. And my first day there, I had a spontaneous spiritual awakening where I realized I was just trying to run from my own inner world, my own thoughts. I was depressed because of thoughts. I was anxious because of thoughts. I was suicidal because I was paying so much attention to my thoughts. I was actually neglecting my present moment. I was neglecting my feelings. And I had this enlightening aha moment. And that's when I believe this journey really began. Wasn't something I consciously chose. It's kind of something that just happened, you know?
Wow, that's a start. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's always interesting. I feel like we kind of on the same wavelength of, I think, the sense of consciousness and enlightenment. A little bit similar. I went through a real bad depression end of college, and I was just trying to make sense of a lot of stuff. I didn't know what to believe in anymore. I wasn't believing that God at that point in time. I think I was, I would like to say agnostic, but I don't know. There were so many different religions and beliefs that I was just falling into. I didn't know what was right and what was wrong. And the journey itself to find yourself and to find those answers that you're looking for, I tell people all the time, it was probably the most loneliest and darkest times of my life, and I think most people's lives, because you're trying to like. No, nothing makes sense. Like the more you find out or the more you see, like everything just, it just seems, it just doesn't have a meaning behind it. It's similar, I think when you're in that space, money doesn't matter. You're just buying stuff. It just, everything feels meaningless. And I mean, especially when the ending is still the same, you still end in depth. So I think that's always a unique perspective when you hear it from somebody else. So you discovered this autoimmune disease at 24. How old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
26.
26. Oh, it's only been 2 years. Oh, wow. How have you been able to navigate through it now? Like, what's changed in regards to the mindset and understanding of just life itself with experience or something like that?
Question. Well, it's funny that you mentioned this sort of philosophical depression, realizing how nothing matters, everything is empty and meaningless. And that's originally why I was so depressed. And now, I kind of, it's kind of the same mindset, but the flip side of it, realizing how pain is temporary, all experience is temporary, and it's understanding that this physical reality is an expression or a manifestation of our consciousness, our energy. So what helps me to navigate, my mental, emotional, and physical life is realizing that if something appears out of balance, it's because my consciousness is out of balance. I'm not centered. I'm not anchored. I'm not grounded. So what helps me to navigate is staying grounded in the present moment and in the now.
And the common question people ask as a follow-up is, how do you do that? Like, from your perspective, how do you stay grounded in such a busy world that we live in?
Right. Well, what helps me might not resonate with everyone, but what I found very helpful is something in the spiritual community known as self-inquiry, which basically means being aware of your own being rather than getting lost in thought. And a really easy way for me to stay grounded in the present moment is to recognize that everything I hear, everything I see, everything I sense or perceive is temporary. And the only constant is awareness, which is always in the now. It can't go anywhere else.
Yeah. No,
That's what helps me.
that's very true. You mentioned books. What are some of the favorite books that you've read during this experience?
A lot of favorites.
I want to see our comment. I want to see if we have some of the similar books.
It's not so spiritual, but a book I find myself thinking about is The Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass. I really
Really?
admire him. Yeah, because
Okay.
he lived it by example. He was pure spirit. Nothing stopped him. He was totally fearless. He lived and died by the truth. Just
Yeah.
he's a man that really inspires me, to be honest.
Right.
But I guess a more spiritual book, The Alchemist.
Ah, yes. One of my favorites. Why did it speak to you?
Many things. One, because I kind of identified a bit of a as an alchemist during my journey, transmuting energy and restoring balance to myself. But I also just like the language that I used, Apollo used. Mostly, I guess, because I'm also passionate about writing and I've loved to write fiction as well, spiritual, non spiritual, non-spiritual fiction, nonfiction. So I kind of also resonate with the, because it's mostly, I think I was introduced to it as a child. So it's very interesting to have such profound truths written in a story originally meant for children. I thought that was really neat.
Yeah,
How about you?
no, so okay. Alchemist was one. I would say the first book that probably introduced me to wanting to know more was probably two, The Four Agreements. I feel like The Four Agreements everybody should read at least once a year. The Power Now by Eckhart Tolle. That was a long one, but it was a good one. The Alchemist, The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. These are like books I just probably have on a constant rotation. I think with me with books, because I'm a writer too, is after a while every book's saying the same thing, but certain books just speak to me more, and those four in particular I find myself going to. Outwitting the Devil, I'm sorry, by Napoleon Hill. I don't Have you heard of that book?
Yeah, haven't read
Yeah.
it, but that's been on my list.
Man, it's so intense, man, because I think I read that. What am I, 30 now? I was like 24, 25, and I think, again, just trying to figure out what was working best for me and my beliefs, and just the interview-based style and how much truth was centered around it. Even though the book was written, I want to say late 1930s or 40s, but I know he couldn't publish it. He promised his family he would not publish it until he passed, because of some of the controversial things that are in the book. And
I
there are
see.
some controversial things in the book, so it was a promise that he made. But to see how much of it still has an influence in today's time, it's really interesting how accurate some of these people were, at a time where they didn't know what the next 60, 70 years probably looked like. They probably didn't even think that we'd have laptops and able to even have these type of conversations. So, just to see that, yeah, I just think it's those type of books that really kind of keep me grounded in a sense, because I think our own personal transformations is always centered around navigating our egos. One, I think that's the hardest thing. I think that's one of the reasons why I started to do these type of interviews, is because, as much as I've enjoyed talking from my perspective, I found more joy in hearing other people's stories to also give me perspective on just life itself. Because I would have, until you told me that, I would have not assumed that you've had those experiences. And I think that's kind of the point. What I want to do with these things is to, you can't judge a book by its cover. You don't know what people are going through on a day-to-day basis. And I think it's just important to give people a platform, really. Like, that's been my goal probably since October, since I really, like, made that conscious decision. 'Cause I wrestled with it for a while. But I've done interviews in the past. I've done several. But out of my ego just wouldn't allow me to go back to it, 'cause I wanted it to be about me, essentially. But I think when I gave it another try, just the amount of conversations I've had over the past few months, I'm like, there's some really amazing people out here, and most people don't know them. Most people don't know them. Most people, or maybe you've tried to get platforms or try to get on platforms, and people act weird, or they charge you to get on their platform. Just a whole bunch of mess. I respect it. I just think, again, we got to go back to the essence of human connection, which is to sit and have a conversation, rather than 30 minutes, an hour. I don't care. Like, I try to learn something from each of this. And then, in that short time now, I've learned so much about you. And things I think that are important. So, but I want to go back to the writing piece. So you said you write fiction, kind of similar to, like, alchemist style books. How long have you been doing that? And do you have a book out? Are you working on a book or anything like that?
Well, I write all types of literature. Mostly for fun, I write fiction, but I've only ever published nonfiction. I've just published my memoir, actually, self-published on Amazon, explaining my story of healing and transformation.
Okay.
So,
Now, I
passing along
love
everything
that.
that helped me.
So when did you start getting into writing? Was that something you did as a kid? Like, was it just a passion that you picked up on?
Yeah, I think I first really enjoyed writing at a really young age, actually, probably elementary school. So maybe like 7 or 8. I just really enjoyed. I think I love to write. I thought, I don't even remember what I would write, but I remember putting a lot of effort into writing like birthday cards for my family. So that's how it started. But then I started really writing, original pieces and expressing my thoughts and ideas. When I was closer to 13, that's when my passion really became a passion. And I didn't start writing about spirituality until, until this healing journey I found myself on. It was mostly philosophy and fiction and poetry.
Oh, poetry. Okay. What type of, I know when people mention poetry, it's like, I mean, can I write poetry too? Do you have a certain style? Is it like a free writing thing, or do you do like haikus, or is it just kind of
I've
like, just like
experimented with,
experimented?
some haikus, some tankas, a lot of Japanese poetry, some free verse, some, I wrote a sonnet, which is was a little cringy, but yeah, just wanted to see what it
Yeah,
was like.
I mean, poetry is one of those things, man, where it's just the beauty of expression, really. And I think especially for us as men, we gotta find outlets to express ourselves, and I think poetry is always a great way. Whether you perform pieces or not, it just gives us a chance to, put our thoughts on paper sometimes. And I think it's the beautiful thing is like there isn't like a it's not a formality thing. You can talk about, the rain outside, and the rain can be a deep connection to something that's important to you. So I think that's what makes it so cool. Have you ever performed any pieces?
Nah, not yet,
No.
man.
Yeah, I haven't either. So it's as much as I enjoy public speaking, it's a fear of mine. There's
Yeah,
some of these pieces are so personal and so vulnerable. I think it's it is the perception of being ridiculed or not performing it to the way that I would like. But I'm
it's
also
something so
like, when,
personal.
yes, it is also like, when you go to these things, like, it's a speakeasy, like a poetry event, they're there for that. They're there to hear those things. So I will hopefully get out of my head one day. With that, I want to go back into the journey that you've been on. What has probably been the thing that you learned most about yourself?
Great question. The thing that most profound truth I've learned about myself is that we do not exist as we think we do.
Hmm, tell me
We
more.
are more of a belief or idea. I believe that the end of self-knowledge, the end of self-discovery, is realizing that we are one with our creator. And this body, this mind, this expression, it's not us. So we're not really who we think we are. It's really a belief. It's an identity, and there's nothing wrong with it. But we can literally reinvent ourselves any minute.
Yeah.
I remember this quote, I think Alan Watts said it. You're not even obligated to be who you were 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so true.
No, you got me thinking. We're just beliefs. We are. Yeah, all the things that people have said to us. We can turn it to belief, kind of going back to like the power of words, powers of words and belief. Wow, I never thought of that. Yeah, it really is true. Like you really can be anything you want to be. So for somebody from your perspective, for somebody who may struggle with that notion of finding new ways to believe in themselves, or find a new way to like establish themselves. What do you think is like a good tip for them to maybe kind of unlearn those beliefs? As I mean, I know it's not like a 1, 2, 3 step, but just like from your perspective, like what do you think would be a good way?
I believe the most effective way to do that would be to target the source. To like when you want to get rid of weeds, you don't cut off the flowers, you cut off the root, you completely uproot the whole thing. So when we find that our current personality has certain habits that we want to change, or certain beliefs or certain perspectives that aren't really serving us, they're leaving us frustrated or leaving us lonely or struggling with addiction. The best way to do that, I believe, is to completely change the root of it, which is our subconscious mind.
Yeah.
Our subconscious mind is, from my understanding, it's the storehouse of our beliefs, our patterns. So I've learned that most of our life unfolds subconsciously based on what we believe about ourselves, based on what we believe about God, our creator, and based on what we believe about the world or how life works. So even when I was an atheist, I still had beliefs about God. I didn't believe in God as a loving father. I believed that God, if he existed, he was just some angry, vindictive, vengeful old man sitting in the sky, if he existed. That's still a belief about God. And I believed at the time that I was a failure. I believed that I was worthless. And I believed that the world was filled with separate evil people who just wanted to gain for themselves. They wanted to manipulate me, or they wanted to just, they only cared about themselves. Everyone was selfish. And that's how my life unfolded. It unfolded through subconscious self-sabotage and unfolded by being forming addictions to weed, alcohol, sex, pornography, you name it. It unfolded by never meditating, never having a sacred moment in my life. So if I really want to change who I am, my personal identity, I would target my subconscious beliefs and change that.
No. Wow. And so
That's what worked
profound.
for me.
And I think that can also work for everybody. I think it's just finding their system. I think you mentioned one thing that we didn't really get a chance to tackle on just yet. I think it's more common in men, are those addictions, those vices that you kind of express. And I know again, these aren't 1, 2, 3 step processes. Some of these, things these we're battling with for years, or silent battles typically, especially pornography, because that's the one that really you like, with drugs and alcohol, you can see alterations to your body, right? Maybe you gain more weight, or your lips turn darker. But porn is one of those where you can't, you would never know. It's not one of those things that people you can visibly see. How are you able, or how were you able to kind of navigate through those addictions? Because those are essentially strongholds they have. Those are another versions of beliefs. Like we feel like we need those things in order to either feel things or to remove the pains that we're feeling in our life or fill some other void.
Well, I did it by doing exactly what you just pointed out, which was recognizing the pattern and understanding myself. And I would basically observe when I wanted to, for example, relapse and watch pornography, I would just understand myself and ask myself, what for? What need am I trying to fulfill? And then one day I realized I was so lonely, I couldn't even, like, I just broke down in that moment. Like, wow, this is why I'm doing it. I don't like who I am. I hated myself. I felt like I was alone. I had this awful sense of loneliness. That's why I'm watching pornography every day. That's why I was. And yeah, it's just asking ourselves, what emotional need am I trying to fulfill with my senses?
Yeah.
Because it's all temporary. Right, I watch something, I need to watch something else. I go on to the next thing until, you reach the happy moment, and then it fades off, and then you just want it again another day or an hour later, whenever it happens. It never actually
Yeah.
satisfies you.
Besides us, yeah. Yeah. It's like it's a dark place. It's something I used to struggle with. I've said that openly, like I feel most men do. I think most people do. It's not, I think it's it's usually a void to, it's just the loneliness, it's the lack of connection. We struggle as people with connection in today's time, because we are so connected through digital devices that while it's a beautiful thing, it does create such a disconnect with simple human interactions. Again, something like this, just having those moments to connect and feel like that you can talk about things. Again, I'd never met you a day in my life until this moment in time. But again, the need to connect is also important. And I think if people had those spaces where they can have those conversations, it'll be more fulfilling. So a question I like to ask people before we wrap up, because I think it's an important question to ask, is what does it mean to be human to you?
Being human means to me. Living with radical self-acceptance and self-compassion. Because we all have a dark side. We all have, everyone has ego. Everyone has good ego and bad ego. Everyone has habits that they want to change or beliefs that we learn mostly from parents or religion. And being human to me means accepting our condition, accepting ourselves totally, how we express ourselves, what we feel, what we think, what we need, what we desire. And allowing ourselves to be human. Because, at least for me, I grew up with the expectation that I needed to be pure or lovable or good. And if I wasn't doing these good, lovable things, then I wasn't worthy of success or connection or love or happiness or money or all the pleasure that life has to offer. So, being human is being our total, complete self and just allowing ourselves to flow consciously.
Yeah, that's well said, man.
What
I
do you
think
feel?
so. I think to me, the first time somebody asked me back, what it means to be human to me, I think it's a multitude of things. I think first thing is one, accepting the gifts that we've been given in this life. I think a lot of us don't recognize how talented that we are as people. And I think sometimes our talents, if it's not centered around some sort of monetary gain, then we won't do it. And so that's always hard for me because of the reality of the life that we live, and we don't know what happens next. We can just kind of go off what we hear and see and think, and we can go into like dimensions and all the other things that people think. I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice if you're able. Especially if you're able, it's the key word, if you're able to do things and you don't do it. It's like my biggest pet peeve. I think anybody that I meet, if they tell me an idea or something they want to do, I'm always big on pushing them to do it because again, we don't know how long we're here, man. We have no idea. Like you said, you mentioned in your story you found out about an autoimmune disease at 24. Same thing happened to me or anybody else tomorrow. So I really am big on trying to capitalize on what I can do right now. Some people call it working too much. We can call it that. The other part of it too is that if I find it fulfilling that I'm doing what I should be doing. My goal, at least right now, is like to when I look at the end of my day, to ask myself, have I actually tried to do something that leaves me fulfilled? A lot of us leave this place with a lot of regret. And especially if you have the ability to live a long life. Like this is a book I've read like 2 years ago. I still have it. Something else I pick up. And I think it's called like A Year to Live. It's an old book. I don't think it's like a bestseller. I think I got it from like my grandma's house and she got it from like a thrift store, but it just spoke to me, and it was just talking about essentially like the year of living. Like, what if you were told tomorrow that you only have 365 days to live? Like, our priorities would change as people. We would try to do as much as we can in that short amount of time. So, I think what it means, if one is to be fulfilled and live life through fulfillment and purpose. Second, I would say is connection. We thrive off that, and this is why a lot of us are suffering, as we don't have that connection, and we're trying to find ways to fill the voids of the loneliness that we feel. There's a big loneliness epidemic, I feel like, in this world, and maybe that's just my counseling brain kicking in, but it's true. I just think a lot of us are so disconnected, that the human elements of connection and the need of it has essentially been augmented. It's not going the way it should be. And so a lot of people struggle with that. And then third, I think is service. I mean, I'm big on that. So again, goes back to why I shifted to making this more interview style story based. It's doing something that I enjoy to do, but also giving the service of giving somebody else a platform again to share the story that people may have not known. Again, like I said to everybody else, until me and you were on this screen talking, I probably have not had a conversation. The most we probably had is a DM interaction and the email. So I go into it with the hopes and the understanding it's a conversation, and then maybe that with that this 30-minute, 1 hour conversation, however long it is, creates a sense of fulfillment. And really, I find more fulfillment knowing that people feel good, especially if it's like the first one. Like before you, I had somebody else. It was her first one ever, and she was so thrilled and she was so happy. And then she posted on her story right afterwards, like, "I just did my first one." Like it, I feel good knowing that I am a part of that journey, even if we never speak again. It means a lot to me, because I mean, I think again that is our that is the importance of us people, is to serve. Again, I can talk about that forever. I always say that. I say that all the time. I ask people that, like, what's the point of marriage? Can't anybody ever tell me? But the answer is service, right? Everybody says everything else is love, is happiness, is this. Like, no, it's service. We're here to serve. That is literally the human thing since the beginning of time. We have been serving in different capacities. So those are a couple of things to me. It's just you're the first one who's asked me it back. Usually it's like you guys answer the questions. Like, all right, guys, all right, appreciate you guys listening, and that's it. But no, I just think it's so many things that means to be human, but those are the ones that really stick out to me, man. So I appreciate this, man. I appreciate this conversation. This was great. This was inspiring. And again, like I said, save the best one for last. So you're my fourth one, but it was definitely the one that I needed. So for those who want to find you on social media, where can they find you?
I find myself posting a lot on Threads. Not so much on Instagram anymore, but my handle is I am creator being on Threads.
Yeah, shout out to Threads, man. It's weird. Again, it's weird how the world works. It really does, because yeah, I almost gave up on podcasting a couple of years, or not a couple of years, a couple of months ago, and I got on Threads, and I just put out a random post one day looking for people to interview, and it just, that's okay. And I met some great people, and I did a second round again, and I'm like, all right, let's see, and you guys book quick. So I really do enjoy this, man. I really appreciate everything. What's the name of your book? I think you mentioned it, but you said it's on Amazon.
Yeah, on Amazon and also available as PDF. It's pinned to my profile. It's called Living on Purpose.
Well, no, make sure I check that out. I'm definitely gonna make sure to buy a copy, and I'm sure we'll be in contact moving forward, man, so I can send you a couple of copies of mine.
Do you
And so
mind if
yeah,
I
I'm
ask you a
excited.
question before we wrap up?
Yeah, please do. Sure, what's up?
What does positive masculinity mean to you?
Oh, we can keep it going. Positive masculinity, great question. So I'm a firm believer that masculinity is such a complex thing. To be a man is complex. I think it's complex simply because of to be a man, we have to unlearn so many unhealthy balance, unhealthy tropes, right? So, stoicism is great. I love it. I think it's a great practice. But to be a comprehensive man, and I'll give credit to it's a guy out of Detroit. His name is Jason Wilson. He's kind of like championed this notion of like men who can be emotional and stoic and expressive and nurturing and like all these different things. But I think positive masculinity is understanding that one, we're not superheroes, so we can't figure out everything alone. Second one is it's okay to cry. think there's nothing wrong with utilizing your emotions to what it's supposed to be, but it's also important to be in control of your emotions. Number three is to find a tribe that is important to you. I think within a lot of men, a lot of our male based driven friendships, they aren't necessarily positive. I mean, if I take it a step further, like I hate, they call it red pill content, but I do hate it. It's a buzzword because it's driven in a lot of men being hurt. Everything is not a woman's fault. I get the notion, but it gets lost in external. It gets lost in money, and it gets lost in you get money so you can get women, but women don't matter. But when you get money, they matter because they're in your. I guess it's backwards. So no, I think it's just again, it's being a whole comprehensive man, somebody who is strong but also knows when he can be weak, as far as just allowing himself to be. Holding his friends accountable, being the leader of a family or family members, I mean, also a man who's loyal, necessarily not, being loyal in a relationship is one thing, but just being loyal to himself. I'm a firm believer that if you cheat on your partner, you cheat on everything else. So that matters too. I don't, when you get in those situations, you don't necessarily do it for the other person. You do it for yourself, right? You love the other person, but if you've done all you can do, then that's okay. You don't worry about what the other person does. You stay loyal to yourself and you stick to your principles and values. So how about you? I'll flip it back to you before you end off.
Great answer. So living with integrity, self-control, strength, and at the same time, compassion. I like to think that strength and gentleness are two sides of the same coin. Because it takes a strong person to be able to be gentle and to really control yourself, especially when interacting with another form of life.
I
Great
think
answer.
that's the biggest thing I had to learn. And I hate how I learned it. Because of my core, I'm a very kind person. I would like to say sometimes I've been too kind. But there was a point in life where I wasn't always kind to people that loved me, regardless of what they did. I could have handled myself better. I don't have to change who I am because of certain situations. And so that was probably the biggest thing I learned is somebody that was very close to me once ago that he used to always tell me that, I can be mad but not mean. But I used to be mean. And so I stuck with that. I understood why I was doing it, but it wasn't right. That's the thing. I was allowing my emotions to take over. What a situation that was very complex. And even though I was impacted by certain actions that person did, I also allowed my emotions to sometimes take over when it shouldn't have, because I had a very similar situation. Why I didn't respond the same way in those notions. I stayed true to who I was. And so that's how I knew I've grown. But also, when you go back in time, you know that if you can do it now, I could have did it then too. So doesn't mean that the results change. It's just realizing that I've always been a kind person. Don't allow other people to change that. That's all. It's a
I
thing,
can
man.
relate with
That's a
that.
balance. I think every man can, because somebody told me this. Everything ties into my dating life. Somebody I saw a couple of years ago. I met her dad a couple of years ago, and he told me something, and it made no sense until it did. He was saying how women are essentially like fine glass. You have to handle them with care. Because women are very complex people, as emotionally driven in their biology they can be, they're also very nurturing and loving. And what you say to them, what you pour into them, what you do, and all that matters. And no different than if you had a, if you had a son you were raising. Maybe it's not fine glass, but also like the words that we say, it's no different than how we would treat a woman. Still gotta be nurturing to our young men as well. This is how, that's why a lot of us are so broken, because we didn't get that proper reassurance, and we fill that void relatively early. Like I said, we could, and these are that topic I can talk about for hours, because it's just, manhood is very, it's just very complex. And I wish people will remember that men are emotional. I will say men are more emotional than women. I would actually stand on that notion. It's just that we have to mask it, out of fear of rejection or criticism or ridicule. I would actually argue that men are more emotional than women. Even the most nonchalant of nonchalant men, he learned that behavior. Like, you know what I mean? Like those are things that I don't think people keep in mind. So,
Yeah, that
it's
being
a tough
nonchalant is a
thing.
mask.
It is. All these things are a mask. That, the athlete, the man who leaves with money. it's all we the if men were able to take off their mask, I would love to see people's reactions. And I don't say that in a negative light, to say that women alone would not be able to handle it, but I don't think the world would be actually able to handle the complexities of what men really struggle with, emotionally. Because if we said what we were feeling all the time, it's complex. But no, it's an
True.
important thing that we talk about, and I'm always a big champion of that, because again, I. Most of my, so I guess for context, I'm a high school counselor by day, but I'm also in the process of being a therapist. And so I got half my clients are men and women, but for my men, a lot of the struggles right now is in their marriage with, more intimacy or not feeling like a man enough, or, somebody's navigating a career. He doesn't know if he's gonna ever make enough money to, like, it's the conversations between my male clients and women clients are, it's like night and day. Because just of the complexities behind it, it's just the man trying to remove all those masks that he has been dealing with for so long. So, like I said, I can talk about this all day. And I appreciate you asking me, because it doesn't always happen. And I really do appreciate this conversation, man. I really do. This was
Yeah, a lot
I
of fun.
figured it was gonna go this way, which is good.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
thanks. It's awesome what you're doing, giving people a voice, giving a chance to connect and show people who they are.
Yeah, I mean,
So fun.
that's what matters at the end of the day, man. It's just, again, allowing people to be people, and wherever this goes, I mean, hopefully my goal is, like anybody else, we all got our own desires, of course. So I would love for this to be big one day, but I still want to do the same thing. I would never want it to change, because there are some people with some very incredible stories, that need to be shared, and conversations that need to be had, man. So I do appreciate you, man. I really do appreciate you joining. This was fun. I'm definitely excited to check out your books, and hopefully anybody listen when this does come out, does find a sense of fulfillment, man. Like, it definitely brought some fulfillment to me on this Sunday night. So I appreciate you. And for those who will listen and are listening, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite audio platform, and check me out on YouTube. And check out Brandon's good stuff and all the work he's doing over at Threads. Till next time.